Women's History Month is celebrated in March to correspond with International Women's Day, which is today, March 8th, and it was first observed 102 years ago in 1911. And we use the celebration to reflect on how women have shaped our society and government and culture and all aspects of our lives, as well as to raise awareness about inequalities that still exist. So we've invited Professor Elaine Tyler May of the University of Minnesota to join us. She's a historian of the United States in the 20th century, and her work centers on the intersection of gender, sexuality, domestic culture, and politics. Her most recent book is America and the Pill, which is a history of oral contraceptives on the 50th anniversary of the pill several years ago. And that was the most recent time that we spoke with her. So welcome, Dr. May.
Well, it's very nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, we're excited to talk with you. It's such a big topic. You know, everyone around the world, I mean, I've seen lots of news stories today, things on Facebook, people talking about it, about International Women's Day. Why is it important to look, at least, you know, in an official way at the status of women and girls?
Well, you know, women obviously are half of the world, and whatever happens to women and girls doesn't just happen to women and girls. It really is a matter of what kind of world we live in for everyone. It's a matter of what kind of culture we have, what our societies are, what our political arrangements are, what kind of democracies are possible. You know, without women's equality, everyone is diminished. Mm-hmm. And the possibilities for our societies across the world, and of course here at home as well, really depend on everybody having full participation and contribution and responsibility for what is happening in our world. So women's equality really is a matter of importance for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Well, you know, now in 2013, as you look back and the time periods that you study in your research and scholarship, what do you feel are some of the most important things that have been accomplished on behalf of women, or, you know, by women, especially here in the United States?
Well, it's kind of hard to even imagine that as recently as 50 years ago, just how different life really was in this country. You know, it was a time where if a woman became pregnant out of marriage, she was shamed, she was disgraced, her life in many cases was ruined. There were very few opportunities for her to have a good outcome. Abortion was illegal, and in many states, even contraception was illegal. Many states had laws that prevented the distribution and use even of birth control of any kind. So that's one thing. We also forget that in those days, if you were looking for a job, you opened up the newspaper, and there was a column that said, job opportunities, men, job opportunities, women. And they weren't the same job. The jobs for women were restricted to what they considered to be women's work, and they had no access to the jobs that were designated for men. And this is even after, of course, women had proved themselves capable, especially in World War II, of doing all kinds of jobs that were previously assumed to be men's jobs. So really, the expectation was that women would, by and large, get married and have children, and that would be their primary occupation, regardless of their background, regardless of their economic situation or, you know, racial or ethnic identities. That was sort of what women were supposed to do. Now, we know that women didn't, by and large, do that because, on one level, either they couldn't because their income was necessary for their own survival and that of their families, or because they wanted to do something else, something different. And those issues, those decisions, those struggles were very real at the time, and it took a lot of work on the part of a lot of political activists, women as well as men, to open those doors and make those things possible and really change the way everyone lives. Mm-hmm. And of course, the situation isn't perfect today, but it's a lot better than it was.
Well, I was reminded of how, you know, recent some of these changes were when I met with a friend a couple days ago who was telling me that she was interviewed for a film, a documentary film about the first woman Supreme Court justice on the Minnesota Supreme Court, and that was in the 70s.
Yes, and it's really amazing.
Yeah, it's not that long ago.
There were so few opportunities for women in any kind of leadership positions, you know, until starting just about then. And it's kind of amazing that at this point we've had, you know, obviously we have women on the Supreme Court. We've had a serious woman candidate for president. We've had women in very high office. So, you know, at the top level, certainly there's more opportunity for women. Some of the struggles, however, are still very real. It's still really hard for women to pursue aggressively a career and also have children and have a family life that is meaningful. It's, of course, true for men as well. But as far as women are concerned, since they're the ones, obviously, who get pregnant and have children, these are still very, very pressing issues. And our institutions haven't changed as much as women's aspirations have changed, haven't opened up as much. They've sort of said, well, okay, you're welcome to join us, you're welcome to participate, but you have to participate on the same basis that men have always participated and figure it out from there. So, you know, that's been a partial victory, but we still have a very rigid economic and institutional structure that makes it hard for men, but especially for women, to combine meaningful family life and childbearing with a career. So there's still a lot of work to do.
Yes, well, that does lead me right to my next question is, in your view, Elaine, what areas are, you know, still need to be addressed where there's the most pressing inequalities?
Well, you know, there's some issues that have persisted, such as the income gap between men and women. Women still earn less than men, and women still tend to be more likely to be impoverished than men, especially single women with children. And that hasn't been fixed, and our public policies have not fully addressed what needs to be done there. And then in other areas, we made gains and then lost some gains that were made. I think contraception is a pretty amazing and shocking in some ways example of this. If we put abortion aside and just look at access to birth control and birth control pill or other contraceptive devices, you know, we had all of these legal and political victories in the 60s and 70s that opened up certainly contraception as a, you know, as something that should always be accessible and available to women as well as men. And in recent years, even contraception has been rolled back and has gotten caught in the politics of abortion to where a lot of the availability and subsidies that have been provided for basic contraception are now cut back, and women are finding it more difficult to gain access and more difficult to afford basic contraceptive services. So, you know, that's really unfortunate. And, of course, the struggle over abortion continues, and we still haven't seen where that's going to end, even after the Roe v. Wade decision made abortion legal. It has been increasingly chipped away to where, in many places, women don't have access to abortion services, and it's a legal procedure that should be available, and it's in many places, it's just not. So I think, you know, in terms of work and pay and reproductive rights and certainly domestic issues, domestic violence mm-hmm. issues, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. And I think if we look internationally, and here we are today celebrating International Women's Day, you know, if we look, of course, just at American women, for all of the struggles we still need to address and the inequalities that persist, you know, we are very privileged in this country compared to other places where women's lives are really, really constrained. And in many cases, they are subject to persistent violence and really have almost no opportunities that where they can have any self-determination at all. Mm-hmm. I saw a wonderful film last night called Girls Rising, and it looked at 9 girls in 9 different countries in the developing world and the struggles they've had just to be able to go to school, just to be able to learn how to read and write, and what that has meant for them and what education for girls means in terms of their future opportunities and that of their countries. You know, an educated population, girls and boys, makes for a stronger, more vital, more economically viable and culturally rich place. And in so many parts of the world, even learning to read and write and going to school, even for just a few years, is off limits for so many girls. And, you know, if we think about that in itself as an issue of major international concern and how that affects, you know, people's health, their lives, their futures, their opportunities, their families, their children, everything. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very pressing issue.
It seems like a basic rights issue to be able to have access to education. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Professor Elaine Tyler May of the University of Minnesota. She's a historian, and her work centers on gender, sexuality, domestic culture, and politics. And she joins us in honor of the fact that it's International Women's Day today. Well, Elaine, what do you see as some of the main tasks? And I know that this is tricky given that we have 5 minutes left, but what do you see as some of the main tasks that need to be accomplished in order to bring women into full equality with men in the years ahead?
Well, nothing has ever happened automatically when it comes to a struggle for equality, whether it's on the basis of gender or race or religion or anything else. It's always required activism. It's always required politics. It's always required work. It almost never happens from the top down. And what's going to have to happen is that women and men have to come together and demand change and insist on it and make it an issue. You know, if we look back to the suffrage movement, you know, it was men and women coming together, but it was especially women organizing and advocating on their own behalf, saying women must have the vote. And it took decades before it actually happened. And in the end, obviously, it was men who had to grant women the vote because women couldn't vote their own their own interest in this. And it finally happened, but it took struggle, and it took suffering, and it took much sacrifice. And, you know, people forget what a lot of women went through, hunger strikes, being arrested, being beaten. People forget that the suffrage movement was met with huge violence and huge resistance, and yet women fought for what they believed was an essential right as citizens, and finally they won that struggle. And hopefully the kinds of measures that are required now to bring full equality and opportunity for women won't require that kind of sacrifice and won't result in violence, but it's still going to be necessary for women in particular, and hopefully with men alongside, to advocate and work for political and institutional and public policy change. That's the only way it's going to happen. And, you know, all of these issues, we can't just sit back and watch things happen. If women lose their reproductive rights, they've really lost a huge amount of opportunity and essential freedoms that are basic human rights and that are essential for allowing women to fulfill their own destinies. And if women continue to slip economically where men move forward, then the gains of the women's movement will be constrained. Mm-hmm. And families will suffer, children will suffer, women as well as men will suffer. These are the kinds of things that they're going to take some political action for change to come about. So we can't just assume that all the battles have been won and sit back and celebrate how far we've come. Certainly we have come far, but we have a lot more work to do.
Right. Well, speaking of celebrating, is there a particular way you observed this day today or at the university they observed it?
Well, I would say there hasn't been an official celebration, but there's actually been quite a bit of talk, quite a bit of mention. I was at a symposium today where a woman was giving a talk about Title IX, mm-hmm. Which was, of course, the public policy measure that required equal resources being devoted to women's educational opportunities as well as men's, and much of that has been talked about in terms of athletics. But it certainly came up in the discussion that it was International Women's Day and it was Women's History Month and how appropriate it was. I'm not sure that the scheduling of this event was because it was Women's Day, but, you know, International Women's Day, but it certainly came up in the discussion, and it seemed quite fitting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Professor May, I want to thank you so much for giving us your time again this evening, for talking with us again. Really appreciate it, and appreciate your perspective.
Well, thank you so much, and my greetings to the entire Grand Marais community. I love it up there, and I get there whenever I can. So
good. Well, let us know next time you're going to be here, and we'll have you in the studio in person.
Great. Well, thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Professor.